Tonight, our special guest on Coast to Coast AM, Maurice Cotterell. Sunspots, how they affect history, the rise and fall of civilizations around the world, and the implications of the sun's recent pattern of activity, or should we even say lack of activity. In a moment, Maurice Cotterell on Coast to Coast AM. Maurice Cotterell, a 1989 engineer, scientist, he found a way of calculating the duration of the long-term magnetic reversals on the sun. Using this knowledge, he was able to break the codes of the sun-worshipping civilizations of the world. First, the Mayas of Mexico, then those of Tutankhamun of Egypt, the Viracochas of South Africa, the ancient Chinese, now the European Celts. Their secret knowledge of the super science of the sun and the high order of spirituality enabled him to locate the Holy Grail. Full program tonight. Our friend Maurice Cotterell. How are you doing, Maurice?
I'm fine, George. How are you?
Good. It's good to hear your voice again, my friend. Boy, we're going through some calamities here in the United States these days, Maurice.
We are here as well.
You're feeling it?
Well, they say when America sneezes, the rest of the world catches cold.
So true. So true. Are you seeing layoffs and things like that in the United
Kingdom? We certainly are, yes.
Oh, my. Well, let's talk about some pleasant things. Let's talk about things where people can let our minds drift for a while. I think we need relief tonight, Maurice. Can you give it to us?
Well, I'll certainly try.
Lots to talk about, and I also want to talk with you about 2012 by the end of the program tonight and get your take on that. The sun finally showed a sunspot, first time in months, and a lot of scientists continue to be very puzzled by what's happening. What do you think's going on?
Well, sunspots have been known for, you know, if we just have a look at what they are, George, sunspots have been observed for thousands of years. They were first recorded by the ancient Chinese more than 3,000 years ago. And basically, sunspots are brown areas on the sun. They're brown spots on the golden background. And we now know why they're brown. They're a lower temperature than the background. The spots themselves, these are areas of intense magnetism. They are about 4,000 degrees centigrade in temperature, and their background is about 6,000 degrees centigrade. So when we actually observe them from Earth, we see them as dark patches. And we know that there's a cycle. As I say, they've been observed, and the ancient Chinese have noticed the cycle around about 11 to 11 and a half years, but there was no complete agreement as to exactly how long the cycle duration lasted. At least that was then. I mean, things have changed now. In 1961, two engineers, Babcock and Layton, they put their heads together and came up with a mechanism that described just what causes these spots on the sun's surface. And they figured out that because the sun has two magnetic fields, one's like the Earth, it's like a bar magnet going from north to south, and because it has four magnetic fields around the equator, and because these two different magnetic fields spin on their axis at different rates, they said, these two engineers, Babcock and Layton, said that because the equator of the sun spins faster than the polar regions, the magnetic fields get all tangled up and they burst through like pockmarks on the sun's surface. Now, they put that forward in about 1961-62, and that's more or less accepted as the model of the day today. Now, I mentioned earlier that the average duration for a cycle of spots, and when we say a cycle, when there's a lot of activity, we tend to get hundreds of spots on the surface.
Which is, they call that the solar maximum, I guess, right?
That's the solar maximum, yes. And 11 years later, 11 and a half years later, we'll get a sunspot minimum or fewer spots showing, or no spots at all sometimes. The cycle reverses every 11 to 11 and a half years. And scientists have been perplexed as to why the cause of the cycles. We appreciate that there's two magnetic fields, but nobody's ever come up with an explanation as to why they should rise and fall every 11 and a half years. Now, in 1989, I had a look at this problem when I was working at Cranfield University. And if we look at the actual parameters of the sun's magnetic fields, we don't immediately see any clue as to what might be causing the cycle to wind up, as Babcock and Layton proposed. Now, we know from Mariner 2 spacecraft and other probes that the sun spins on its axis, just like the Earth. But the sun, because it's a ball of plasma, it's like a superheated sticky gas, the equatorial region rotates faster than the polar regions. What this means is the North Pole and the South Pole rotate every 37 days, but the equator moves faster every 26 days. Now, if we ask why that might be happening, it's not obvious, it's not apparent,
right?
Because there is no obvious cause that could make the equator move every 26 days in a circle or the poles every 37 days. For example, if we look to the Earth moves 365.25. It takes the Earth 1 year to move around the sun, 365.25 days. If we look at Venus, for example, Venus takes about 274 days to move around the Earth, or 584 days viewed from the Earth. And if we look at the planet Mercury, which is closest to the sun, Mercury moves around the sun once every 87.969 days. So none of those figures agree with the sun's rotation period of 37 and 26 days. But when we start to look at the differentials, the picture changes immediately, and the answer becomes clear as to the cause of this winding up of the sun's magnetic fields. For example, if we look at the equatorial speed, what we see is the equator, although it moves 26 round once in 26 days, if we divide that 360-degree orbit by 26, we come out with 13.84 degrees a day. In other words, we know the sun moves 13.84 degrees a day.
Okay,
around the equator. But if we look at the poles, it moves 9.729 degrees a day. If we subtract one from the other now, what we come out with is a figure of 4.1 degrees a day. And that is the speed Mercury moves around the sun. Now, what that means is that the magnetic field of Mercury must be dragging the magnetic field of the sun more quickly around the equator than it does around the poles. And then if we go back to the Babcock and Leighton mechanism of winding up of the magnetic fields, we see that the winding up of the magnetic field of the sun causes the spots to burst out every 11 and a half years. And in fact, there are three cycles if we look at them: 11.499 years, 68,302 days, which is 187 years, and another longer cycle of 18,139 years.
And those are pretty accurate, these periods?
They are accurate because I put them into I managed to calculate them when I was working at Cranfield in 1989. I put the variables into a computer program, asked the program, if all of these variables start off together, the sun's pole, the sun's equator, and the Earth, when will they all get back together? And this wonderful graph comes out of the computer which shows the magnetic activity on the sun. And when the sun is unusually magnetic, it gives off particles, electrons and protons, which result from nuclear fusion inside the sun. When the sun's quiet, then fewer particles are given off the sun. And these have several effects. We know from Mariner 2 spacecraft in 1962 that the particles now travel to the Earth. They get tangled up in the Van Allen belts, which are radiation belts that protect the Earth. And the magnetic field on the Earth actually changes. It gets squashed and pulled. And this has all sorts of effects on life on Earth. It has effects on communications. It destroys, for example, orbiting satellites. It disrupts shortwave communications, which bounce off the sky. It has lots of documented effects going back hundreds of years, from an increase in accident rates on Earth to epidemics, influenza pandemics. We now believe it causes schizophrenia on Earth. We believe it's responsible for causing cancer. We believe it's responsible for causing blood clots and an increase in heart attacks. We believe that the changing magnetic field of the sun causes the Earth to periodically turn on its axis and bring catastrophe to Earth. So it affects Earth in a whole host of ways. And we are not the first to recognize this. We're just coming to terms with it. But all of the ancient sun-worshipping civilizations, the Mayas of Mexico, the Peruvians, the Egyptians, the ancient Chinese, and the Celtic people, they were aware of all this knowledge thousands of years ago.
Is it dangerous if the sun doesn't react the way it's predicted to?
It depends. You see, there are good things and bad things that result from high sunspot periods and low sunspot periods. For example, if we have a period of high sunspot activity, we have more fertility on Earth, but we also have more incidence of schizophrenia. So it's good and bad in parts, and it depends what you're actually analyzing and what you're looking at and what you're looking for. We know that sunspot minimums cause mini ice ages on Earth. So if we're looking at a period of global warming, then a sunspot minimum would help us out in that the sunspot minimum would cool the Earth down naturally. So again, it's difficult to just come out and say, well, sunspots are good or sunspots are bad. They're good and bad in different ways.
Are we, what are the chances, Maurice, of us getting hit by a direct hit with an X flare? A couple of years ago, we were lucky. There was a huge X flare, but we weren't in alignment with the sun, and it truly missed us. What about a direct hit?
Of course, solar flares are another phenomena on the sun, and a solar flare is like when you get a big burst of gas coming off the sun, and again, you get a mass ejection of particles, and those particles, again, flow to the Earth and cause all sorts of damage and effects on the Earth. The solar flares, we can't predict them at this time, unlike the cycle, which we now understand how to calculate and when to expect highs and lows. We can't do that with solar flares because we don't understand the activity of solar flares in the same way. But clearly, if a solar flare, an ejection of gas and particles comes out of the sun and it's pointing towards the Earth, then the beam of radiation will impinge upon the Earth and have effects on the Earth. And it would appear that if we go back in history, that this is what caused mutations. In other words, I just have to digress slightly onto Darwin's theory. Now, Darwin says that we all develop from apes, but Darwin can't explain why we have apes still alive today. If we all evolved from apes, why have we still got apes? Another problem is, if we all evolved from apes, how can we have black ones, white ones, yellow ones, and brown ones? Why didn't we all evolve from apes in the same way?
Exactly.
And if the giraffe came from the horse, how come no intermediary bone lengths of giraffe necks? How come no giraffes with medium-sized necks have ever been found? They haven't. Now, once we understand the mechanism of solar flares, we get a burst of X-rays and gamma rays coming off the sun and solar particles. They travel to Earth. They blast apes in a small spotlight, a footprint on the Earth, and only apes in that spotlight will be mutated. The genes in those developing fetuses in that species of ape will be mutated by a beam, a narrow beam of radiation. And it seems that understanding of sunspot activity allows us to understand deficiencies in Darwin's theory, and it helps us to appreciate that man may have well have evolved from apes, but we have to modify Darwin's theory in light of our current understanding of what we call ionizing radiation. And this is radiation which causes mutations. And we know from experiments in the Second World War that if we fire genes with X-rays, then all sorts of mutations occur. If we fire X-rays onto the fruit fly, Drosophila melanogaster, the fruit fly develops two heads or 12 legs or whatever because of the X-rays. And this is why pregnant females don't get X-rayed, because it's dangerous for the developing fetus. So once we start to appreciate just how dangerous solar flares can be, and once we appreciate that it's all part of the magnetic activity on the sun, just like sunspots, then we have to change the way we do things. For example, there's no point in sending a whole generation of satellites into space without really understanding how these particles can blow up satellites in space.
Exactly.
What's happened over the last 30 years is that we have dismantled the shortwave radio system on Earth. So now we have virtually no shortwave. The military still uses a little. But the factories that used to produce the tubes, the thermionic tubes, and the transmitters and the receivers for shortwave operation, they've all closed down. Now we have microchip factories. We can no longer manufacture the tubes to allow the high-power radiation of shortwave signals and so on. And what happens is technology is like footsteps in the sand. Technology erases itself. If we go back in time just 30 years, you'd be hard-pressed to find a factory or a university without a slide rule. Indeed, before that, we used to have a logarithmic table, but the slide rule erased the log table. Now we have electronic calculators. They erased the slide rule. And what's happening is we're losing our ability now with the electronic calculator to do long multiplication and division. New students today, they can't spell because spell checkers are given on computer programs. So we are involved in this process of evolution, which is pulling us. Instead of being driven by man, we're being pulled by engineering and technology. Indeed, it's not so much science anymore. Science, it seems to me, is going nowhere at this moment in time. But engineering and technology is dragging us into the future, and it's dragging us too quickly. We're not having time to think about the consequences of if the satellites get knocked out of the sky in some sort of war, if you like, on Earth, and it's an easy thing to do. We have the technology now. So there will be no communications on Earth whatsoever.
Well, life would be completely changed, Maurice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And everything we rely on has a battery in it. And if we have a sunspot minimum and we run out of energy and we can't generate electricity to make the batteries, to recharge the batteries, we just won't be able to feed ourselves. Everything has gone to very low current devices. Indeed, we're getting devices now that we can strap onto our heads and think to give computers commands. And that's all very well. That's the upside. But the downside is when things go wrong, they go wrong badly. Fly-by-wire might be very sophisticated and very good for aircraft. But when things go wrong, we can't retrieve the situation. There's not enough time. So I think we need to slow down with technology and start debating the pros and cons instead of just bringing out new products to make money so that capitalism thrives, if you like. We need to start looking at the benefits in the long term for mankind.
How did the ancients, Maurice, know about sunspot activity and know about the sun in general? How did they know this?
This was a question that perplexed me. When I was doing the sunspot cycle around 1989, one of the cycles I came out with, the 3,740-year magnetic reversal cycle for the sun's neutral sheet. In other words, the equator of the sun, the magnetism on the equator changes every 3,740 years. That's a very specific figure. It's 1,366,040 days. Now, that would take me years to figure out on the computer and to think about a way of doing it. Just to think about doing it, I had to devise a new way of mathematics. I called it rotational differentiation. And it's quite a complex, but it's a novel way of looking at rotating variables. Now, just to get that figure, I had to go through the rotational differentiation, put the numbers into a computer program, come out with the calculations. And then I came out with this figure of 1,366,040. Then I realized, I was reading a book on archaeology, that the Mayas worshipped that same number, and they called it the birthday of Venus, or the rebirth of the planet Venus. Now, it seemed quite extraordinary. How could an ancient civilization have known this particular figure for sunspot activity, solar magnetic activity, that had taken me years to figure out on a computer? And so I got very interested in the ancient Mayas and how, and started to try to figure out how they could possibly have known. And the Mayas worshipped the sun as the god of fertility and the god of astrology. And this really were the first clues as to what was going on.
Let's pick this up right where you left off. Maurice Cotterell will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Some exciting things coming up for you here for Coast to Coast AM. First of all, we're going through a major new website design. Lex and I have been looking at the samples and prototypes for the last week, and we're fine-tuning it, honing it down, and we're going to ask you for some suggestions as well. We're also going to make available to you soon, some of you have gone up to the website already to try to sign up, a free regular newsletter from Coast to Coast, giving you updates, information about guests, and some tidbits that you normally don't get. So that's going to be free for all of you. All you got to do is sign up for that, and when the time comes, I will let you know. And then for you Streamlink members, of course, you can always sign up for Streamlink with some new things coming down the pike on that as well. Now, for After Dark members, of course, After Dark is the newsletter that is now the magazine, part of Coast to Coast AM. So it's now the After Dark magazine, full color, major stories about major issues. Call 1-888-727-5505 to subscribe to After Dark magazine, or you can go online at coasttocoastam.com. Pick up where you left off, Maurice. We're talking about the Mayans and their knowledge of the sun.
Certainly. Archaeologists, looking at the Mayan civilization, unearthed all kinds of artifacts that appear to be describing how infants and babies were killed by the sun's radiation. These were unearthed primarily at Teotihuacan, which is in the middle to the northern part of Mexico. And these show the sun's rays, and inside it, babies, carved babies, like jelly babies, like the sweets, with very sad mouths, downward-turning mouths. And it seemed that the Mayas were acutely aware that somehow the sun was affecting fertility and that it was affecting their own fertility. In other words, they were trying to tell us that the failure of sunspots was causing a lack of fertility in their civilization, and that, in turn, was killing them. At the same time, they realized that when there is a disruption to fertility, there is less rainfall, and that inspired drought. So, of course, they were very fearful that they were going to die from starvation. And they also seem to understand that when the sun's neutral sheet, that's the magnetic field around the equator, twists direction, then it tends to twist the Earth off its axis, just like a compass and a magnet. The needle of a compass would switch in the proximity of a magnet. And if we look at the Aztec calendar and also the lid of Palenque left by the Maya, the Aztec calendar was left by the Aztecs, the lid of Palenque by the Maya, then they tried to tell us about the effects of the sun, that the effects were having on them at that time. And they believed that the Earth had been created and destroyed on four previous ages, and that it had been destroyed at various times due to earthquakes, pole tilting and volcanic eruptions, fertility disruptions, and drought and famine inspired by sunspots. Now, again, all this seems rather hard to believe. How could the Mayas, such an ostensibly primitive civilization, have known about this knowledge? I decided to go down to Palenque, the ceremonial center of the Maya, in 1987 and again in 1989.
Because you wrote a book also called The Mayan Prophecies, if I remember.
I did. In fact, since 1995, when The Mayan Prophecies was published, I've published six books, all on the sun-worshipping civilizations of the world. The Mayan Prophecies was about how the Maya understood how the sun affected them. The super gods explained who taught them this super knowledge. The Tutankhamun Prophecies explains how the Egyptians understood this super science of the sun, I call it. And it also affects God as well and the higher orders of spirituality. It's not just sunspots. It goes into religion and spirituality. It goes into the soul. It goes into reincarnation. But they introduce us to all this knowledge through science. They take us through the scientific route first to impress us, and then they start to tell us about what the world's all about, why we live, why we die, what God is, what heaven is, what hell is, and so on. Then in 2001, I went down to Peru and investigated the Mochica civilization of Peru. They came before the Incas, and also the Incan civilization. Then in 2003, I looked at the ancient Chinese sun worshippers of Qin Shi Huangdi, the first emperor. And then more recently, in 2006, I looked at the sun-worshipping Celtic people that worship the sun. The Celtic cross is a schematic representation of the sun's magnetic fields.
Okay, now, so a lot of this then is all directed at what they visualized, what they saw during their own particular time, right?
Absolutely. During their own particular time, they worshipped the sun because they knew the effect the sun would have. And it's only now, in 1995 in the Mayan prophecies, 1999 in the Tuk prophecies, I set all this information down. I brought all the science of the day together. And, you know, I now understand how the sun affects fertility on Earth. And if we go back to all the scientific discoveries, they're quite straightforward. In 1957, James Van Allen, who works for NASA, he discovered the belts of radiation around the Earth, the Van Allen belts. In 1979, a professor, Ian Nicholson, he realized that when particles are ejected from the sun in coronal mass ejections and sunspot activity, they bombard the Van Allen belts and the Earth's magnetic field is squashed and pulled. In 1987, Dr. Ross Ady, the White House medical advisor for President Reagan, he did some experiments on rats and guinea pigs and pigeons. And he noticed that when he bombarded these creatures with modulating magnetic fields, the effect of melatonin changed within them. In other words, the modulating magnetic fields changed the generation of melatonin, the timing hormone and the sex hormone. And from that, we understand from Pierre Pauli and Riegelson, they published a book in 1995, The Melatonin Miracle, and they said that magnetic fields affect the manufacture of melatonin, and melatonin affects the manufacture of estrogen and progesterone. So now we have this mechanism whereby we have a load of sunspots giving off particles. The particles travel to Earth. They get caught in the Van Allen belts. The magnetic field of the Earth changes very slightly, going up and down. And we know from other experiments from America that these modulating magnetic fields cause genetic mutations in the fetus in the womb. Mm-hmm. And my analysis of sunspots and solar activity in 1995 showed that when we analyze the magnetic behavior of the sun, we actually appreciate that the sun gives off 12 different types of radiation during the year. Every month is different. And this results in 12 types of genetic mutation on Earth. And because we know that personality is genetically determined from experiments in psychology going back hundreds of years to the beginning of the last century, from Freud and so on, that we now understand the mechanism that affects astrology. In other words, the 12 types of radiation cause 12 types of mutation, which gives us 12 types of personality. So we have genetic mutations at conception. We have biorhythms that occur after we're born, and those repeating radiation patterns give us good weeks and good months and bad months and good years and bad years, and affect our behavior. And this is why they affect human beings in so many different ways like accident proneness and epidemics and temperatures on Earth. The sunspot cycle causes mini ice ages and so on. So we understand why the ancients found it so crucial to monitor these cycles, because their very existence depended on it. But it goes a bit further than that, because we question, well, where did they get the knowledge from? And this was the big question for me in the mid-90s. I went down to Mexico and to Egypt and to Peru, and it was only when I'd been to all of these places that I was able to put a picture together. And the number of the sunspot cycle, 1366040, was encoded by the Mayas in their treasures to tell us, future generations, about the importance of how the sun can destroy life on Earth. And they worshipped another number very close to that, just 520 days difference, which is 1366560. And they refer to that as the birthday of Venus. Now, it looks like the sun's magnetic field twisted in 3113 BC, that's 5,000 years ago. When the sun's magnetic field twisted, it made Venus turn upside down on its axis. And that's why Venus now rotates backwards very, very slowly on its axis.
Right.
In a different direction to all the other planets. So what the Maya was saying, and of course we have to remember that the Maya didn't appear in Teotihuacan until around 0 AD. Until about 2,000 years ago. So why would a people start their calendar 3,000 years before they even appeared on the Earth? I mean, it's just odd. So obviously they knew something had happened 3,000 years earlier, And it looks like they were expecting it to happen again when, and it would affect them. Now, if we take this number and work it forwards from that date in 3113 BC, then what we come out with is a date around 627 AD, and that's when the Maya started to die out. So the Maya knew that the sun would change its magnetic field. It would affect fertility because it would affect the amount of progesterone and oestrogen, so there'd be less babies born. It would affect the amount of X-rays bombarding the Earth, because when we have a sunspot minimum, we get more X-rays and more solar radiation bombarding the Earth. That causes more fetal mutations in the womb. It would affect the temperature of the Earth because we'd get a mini ice age, and that would mean drought, and that was a triple whammy for the Maya. So the Maya disappeared. So we say, well, if that happened to the Maya, why didn't we disappear? Well, we live in...
Well, it's not over for us yet, though, Maurice.
It certainly isn't. I mean, yeah. It's going to be with us forever. I mean, we're all part of this cycle. We are just responding to the cycle, and we are forecast to... the sunspot cycle will increase to maximum over the next 5 years, but that's simply maximum on an 11.5-year cycle. If we have a look at the other cycles, the longer cycles of 187 years, what we understand is that the 187 years mixes with the 11.5-year cycle and gives us longer cycles of up to 18,000 years. And these cycles affect the rise and fall of populations on Earth. And a researcher named John Eddy, an American, in 1978, he put together some graphs from tree ring data. Now, we know that when there's a sunspot minimum, what happens is there are less particles ejected from the sun. And if we imagine the particles on the sun as clouds on the sun, but they're clouds of charged particles, not like water clouds on the Earth.
Right.
So when we have a sunspot minimum, we have fewer clouds covering the sun, which means more cosmic radiation bombards the Earth. And because of that, more nitrogen is converted to carbon-14. So during a sunspot minimum, carbon-14 is absorbed by plants and trees. And because of that, we can chop down a tree, we can look at the tree rings, measure the carbon-14, and find out what was going on with the sunspot cycle up to 4,000 years ago, because the bristlecone pine lives for 4,000 years. And, of course, coal deposits from the bristlecone pine will take us back 8,000 years. This is given us a picture going back 8,000 years of sunspot activity. And what John Eddy did was he looked at sunspot activity, he looked at carbon-14, the increase and decrease of carbon-14, he looked at the temperatures on Earth, and he realized that sunspot cycles, minimums, they cause ice ages on Earth. And indeed, during 1645 to 1715, there was no sunspots at all during that period for 60 years. And the sunspot cycle stopped completely. Now, this is interesting because you would be quite right to ask the question, well, hang on a minute, if the planet Mercury winds up the sun's magnetic fields, how can the sunspot cycle stop? Because Mercury doesn't stop. Mercury is going all the time. It's orbiting the sun continuously. So what's happening to stop the magnetic field getting wound up to stop the sunspot cycle? Now, it seems what appears to be happening is the sun increases its temperature slightly, and that causes Mercury to lose its magnetic field, because it's the magnetic field of Mercury that's dragging the equator around more quickly. So it seems that what happens is a small change in solar radiation affects the temperature on Mercury, which ranges from minus 200 degrees at night on the nightward side. That's, don't forget, one night on Mercury is 88 days of
right.
our time.
That's true.
And during the day, because the day is so long, the day on Mercury goes up to about 300 degrees centigrade. Now, magnetism loses its magnetic field at around 770 degrees centigrade. So what this means is when the sun heats up, and also, of course, we have to recognize that iron, of which Mercury is made, melts at different temperatures depending on the presence of sulfur and iron sulfide, and also pressure beneath the surface of Mercury will affect how iron melts and how the magnetic field responds to both pressure and temperature and chemical changes. So what's happening is when the sunspot cycle stops, it's because Mercury loses its magnetic field. Now, if we look at...
Is there anything unusual happening now, though? I mean, is there a problem in the solar system, or is this normal?
It's absolutely normal. And so you mentioned earlier that you were going to ask a question about 2012, what's so different about 2012. And for me, we can look at this in two ways. Either the Maya were very, very, very clever, which they were, and, you know, we'll touch on this later. We still haven't answered the question of how did they know all this super science, and I'll come to that shortly. What actually happens in 2012, people, the message has been misconstrued. And as I say, it's either due to one of two reasons. One, the Maya were cleverer than us, and they knew something that we have yet to discover. And something will happen in 2012 of which we are not yet scientifically aware.
Of tremendous magnitude as well, right?
It could well be. It could well be. And I'll consider one or two possibilities lately. Another one is that in all the furore about 2012, the message has been completely mistranslated. And a lot of sensationalism has replaced calmness and rationality. And there's an old wartime story that starts off whereby the commander in the trenches in the First World War turns to the soldier to his right and he says, "Here's a message, pass it on." And the message is this: send more troops, we're going to advance. Send reinforcements, we're going to advance. And that soldier tells the soldier next to him, "Send reinforcements, we're going to advance." And it goes all the way down to the line. At the end of the line, the message finishes up: "Send three and fourpence, we're going to a dance." Now, that's an old story about soldiers in the trenches, and it illustrates how the message can get lost every time we pass
so
it on
true.
To somebody else.
So true.
Now, there's an old book written in the 16th century called The Books of Chilam Balam in Mexico. And the Chilam Balam is the books of the jaguar. And they call it, the Maya worship the jaguar because the jaguar is like the sun. It had brown spots on a yellow golden background. So the jaguar was like sunspots. So the books of Chilam Balam tell us about the sunspot cycle. And in the books of Chilam Balam, it says, in the year Katan 13 Ahu, which is how they measured time, they said that there will be infertility, there will be famine, and the earth will tilt on its axis. Oh, they don't say that. They say the sun will not be seen for 5 days. Now, when I looked at that, it seemed to me to all of those three things could be caused by a change in the sun's magnetic behavior. So I started to investigate what could possibly be happening in 2012 to allow that to happen. Now, it's gone from the books of Chilam Balam saying in 2012, these three specific things will happen: infertility, drought, and we will an eclipse for 5 days. It's gone from that. And now people are saying, oh, they're all going into a new age. We're all going to start loving each other. Oh, this is going to happen. Oh, that's going to happen. Well, there's nothing ever been written to substantiate any other claim than the ones in Chilam Balam.
Maurice, when we come back, let's talk about how the sun can change our personalities, and we'll also get into 2012. Final hour, we'll open up the phone lines, and you can talk with the expert tonight on the sun, Maurice Cotterell, on Coast to Coast AM.